Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 20, recorded Thursday, October 27th, 2005. Today's topics, we're talking about the airline experience, travel. It's a people business, the rise of the virtual airline, and finding boundaries of personal space at 35,000 feet. This week, coming to you from the DoubleTree Club in Santa Ana, California, because it's, and I make that distinction because I'm about three blocks away from another regular DoubleTree, I think. Flew into John Wayne Orange County Santa Ana Airport, the U.S. airport with the longest name. Flew in there yesterday afternoon, and I'm headed back tomorrow morning, Friday, on the 6:45 a.m. flight. I probably could have grabbed the red eye back to Chicago tonight out of LAX, but I tell you, as I've said before, I gave up I gave up red eyes for Lent a number of years ago because it's really just sort of a false economy. Yeah, I get back home sooner, you know, but I end up then spending most of the morning either, you know, sort of in bed or dragging around from lack of sleep anyhow. Yeah, I think this is a lot better. I had a nice dinner this evening, a good night's sleep, and then I get sort of 4 hours of uninterrupted work on the flight back. Or since my upgrade on United has already come through, which means I'll have a power in-seat power supply for 4 hours, maybe I'll get this podcast all edited together so I can post it up on the server when I hit the ground early tomorrow afternoon. I don't know, I'm not promising anything. I have to see how my email inbox looks tomorrow morning. I'll tell you, actually, I was dragging a bit on Wednesday and slept actually most of the flight out here yesterday. I stayed up and watched the 5.5-hour, 14-inning Game 3 of the World Series between the Chicago White Sox and the Houston Astros. And wouldn't you know it, this just nails it. So I stay up 14 innings. I'm at the top of the 14th inning, and I just snap off the TV with disgust after the White Sox, after Paul Konerko hits into a double play, only to find out that the next batter hit a home run to break the tie, and then the White Sox added another run. So, that, you know, just go figure. Luckily, I wasn't home last night, I would have been up late celebrating the Sox win of the World Series, the first since, what is it, 1917? Instead, I was standing at the bar at the Gulfstream restaurant in Newport Beach, California, with some Houston fans behind me singing the blues. Definitely kept me under control. Hey, following up on some stuff, podcast number 20, that's where we're at. You know, there's something slightly momentous about that number, or maybe it's just something about numbers ending in 5 or 0. Anyhow, earlier this week, as I began to think about this podcast, I thought, well, you know, maybe I'd do some sort of retrospective. Maybe sort of best listener email or a recap of classic travel stories. You know, round number 20 got me thinking about it. But I got to tell you also, because I was coming up dry on topics, a bit of sort of podcast block. But then I got a couple of emails from listeners, and the topics just began to flow. So we got fresh content this week, and I can save the retrospective trick for another day. Which reminds me, thank you everyone who sends me notes at comments@travelcommons.com or leaves comments on the Travel Commons website, www.travelcommons.com. I'll tell you, you guys make this a lot easier. Shout-outs to a couple of fellow podcasters, Udayan Tripathi, who I mentioned in Travel Commons podcast number 17, as someone who cross-links to the Travel Commons podcast, sent me a note this week saying a couple of things. First, that I had pronounced his name correctly, which, by the way, is a big thing for me, and that his own podcast, take a look at it, Life in London. Udayan says he's 16 years old, used to live in Singapore, but's now living in London, and life in London, and music are the focus of his podcast. The URL's in the show notes. Also, Dan O'Leary left a nice comment on the Travel Commons website under podcast number 19. He also left the name of his podcast, Hotel Coffee. Dan, you'll have to tell us where that name comes from. Which I checked out. Dan's a pilot for a regional airline, I think out of Vancouver, he said, Vancouver, Washington, I think, that he covers the Pacific Northwest and also the Intermountain region. I was listening to one of his podcasts out of a hotel room in Billings, Montana. And that's what he's doing. He's doing his podcasts out of hotels when he's out on the road. Covers a little bit of his life on the road and does some music also. But I'll tell you, he's pumping those podcasts out. I looked at his iTunes page, and he seems to be averaging about one every 2-3 days. Good mix of, like I said, good mix of travel observations and music. Also, a brave guy. He actually put his picture on his iTunes webpage. Unlike me, I wimped out and put a little bit of a graphic there. Anyhow, Hotel Coffee. The URL is in the show notes. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, travel. It's all about people. Jess Green, a Travel Commons listener from Japan, sent the email that saved us all from the dreaded retrospective episode. And as he says, he's been flying since he was two, back when he says Pan Am was the airline and United was in its very infancy. So I'm not going to try and back titrate to his age. I'll let everybody else figure that out on their own. And as with all of us who travel, Jess has had his good experiences and his bad ones. His note provides a recent example of the latter, however. My wife's grandmother in Wisconsin turned 80 last June. My grandmother in Philly turned 90 a week later. And in between, I had a bachelor party and wedding to attend in Pittsburgh. Several days before my wife and I boarded our flight for the first leg of the trip, Narita, Japan to O'Hare and then on to Wisconsin, United Airlines changed the scheduling twice and forgot to notify us. That being said, the trip to Wisconsin was a breeze and the birthday party was a blast. Just a few days later, I'd be off to Pittsburgh to act as groomsman in the wedding of two of my closest friends. Minutes before I left my mother-in-law's home in Wisconsin for the airport, I received an automated telephone message saying that my flight had been canceled and that the only other possibility would be for me to fly from Wisconsin to Chicago to Dulles to Pittsburgh. Let's stop for a minute. Think about that geography. I'm in Wisconsin. I go to Chicago. Okay with that. Now I'm going all the way to the East Coast to Dulles only to come back to Pittsburgh. Got to fly over my destination and keep going for a while. And anyhow, that would have had him arriving 5 hours late for the bachelor party and the tuxedo sizing. You know, you can see where this is going. You know, first, they don't call, and then when they do, it's a machine. You can kind of see the impact of the cost reductions, sort of the service reductions that United has made as it tries to get out of Chapter 11. Well, anyhow, Jess reaches out to some real people to help him. And finally, the second customer service agent he spoke to found him a routing Wisconsin to Chicago to Allentown, Pennsylvania to Pittsburgh that got him in an hour earlier. Okay, you know, a little better. And at the airport in Wisconsin, things seem to be getting a bit better. As he says, I'm truly amazed by Mr. Orrin Mack at United's desk in Wisconsin, who spent 30 minutes with me going over the routes, apologizing profusely, and priority marking my bags. But now, you know, stirring a little bit of weather, the flight from Wisconsin to O'Hare was a half an hour late. The flight from O'Hare to Allentown was an hour and a half late. And in the time between, Jess tried to get some help, a little bit more help, rerouting, a voucher, maybe somebody saying, geez, I'm sorry. Tried to get it from the United Airlines Air Wisconsin customer service agent in the F concourse. But no, instead, the runaround, quite literally, because the customer service agent in Concourse F said he had to go to speak to someone in Concourse B, which any of you know O'Hare, that can easily be a 10-minute walk, and said he had to do this because he had bought his tickets internationally. Well, finally, Jess makes it to Pittsburgh, but just to top off the day, he got to wait 45 minutes for his bags to show up. On the flight home, again connecting through O'Hare, he had some time in transit, so he went to visit the customer service desk in the B concourse, but it was closed. So he crossed over to the C concourse, where he said, my flight was departing from, and I explained to the woman behind the desk what had happened the previous week. She looked up my complaint in the computer, and notation was made, provide compensation. The woman explained the notation to me and then grinned as she explained that I was hosed, she used the word hosed, by her colleague to get me out of her hair in the F concourse days before, and that the only people who could provide compensation, was the customer service department at headquarters, not the concourse customer service reps. Andy says, just in case I hadn't had enough from United for one trip, the flight out of O'Hare back to Narita was delayed for nearly 2 hours. Well, there you go. In the end, he says, I got a small travel voucher from United with their apologies. My Christmas flights have been scheduled on Northwest. I haven't quite decided if United will be getting my business again after all this nonsense. Jess's story illustrates that beneath all the technology, all the machinery, all the websites, all the business model changes, all the people coming into the market, going out of the market, that beneath all of this, the travel business is really about the person-to-person interaction. That moment of truth between a valuable customer and what is oftentimes one of the lower paid employees of an airline. There is a very real tension in the travel industry today, especially the airline industry, between the need to cut costs, which oftentimes means replacing people with technology, or reducing the costs of those people through wage cuts or pension plan abandonment. There's a tension between that need to cut costs and the importance of a personal interaction. This story is about United, but really no airline is immune. We've heard stories on earlier Travel Commons podcasts about American Airlines and British Airways, but the outcomes were different. BA and United, these stories ended with the travelers taking their business elsewhere, while American Airlines redeemed themselves by reaching out in a personal way, taking responsibility, and providing something meaningful as an apology. Though there have been many advances in technology, I'll tell you, I've yet to receive a heartfelt apology from a website. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, the rise of the virtual airline. Well, you know, Northwest Airlines, another airline trying to work its way out of bankruptcy. What have we got? I think we've got United, we've got Delta, we've got US Air, and I don't know if America West goes in there also because they're trying to come out, and Northwest. But they're now looking, they say they're now looking at outsourcing flight attendants, using more non-US attendants on its international flights and non-union attendants on its smaller domestic flights. Now, the O word is certainly getting this move some attention. Wage cuts, contract cancellations, those have all sort of lost their novelty. Those are, you know, somebody goes into Chapter 11, you know those are coming through. Though, I'll tell you, United got some press when it handed over its pension fund obligations to the government. But really, how different is this? I mean, airlines have outsourced big pieces of their business for a while now. Plane ownership to leasing companies, jet engine maintenance to GE, catering to Sky Chef, ticketing and seat inventory to Sabre, customer service centers to the Philippines. You know, assembling these pre-built capabilities actually makes it easier for new airlines to start up, for new competitors to enter, and for other places to get new service. You know, and all, quite honestly, without the hassles and the costs of labor union seniority lists or pension liabilities. I mean, if you read about the America West U.S. Airways merger, they say it's going to take years. And one of the biggest issues is going to be how to merge the union seniority lists, both for the pilots and for the flight attendants. Because remember, whoever's on top of that seniority list gets the first pick of the trips. I think this is the traditional model that Northwest is trying to break, that the most senior flight attendants get the highest wages and the first pick of the flights. And that model, that traditional model, you know, may not always be the best for the traveler. I'll tell you, some of the best service I've ever had has been on Virgin Atlantic from their flight attendants, who were at the time on non-renewable three-year contracts. There was no seniority there. They had one shot at it, and they were excited about travel and looking to make the most out of their 3 years. Some of the worst service I've ever had was on an American Airlines flight to London, with you know, all stocked up in the business class cabin, stocked with senior flight attendants who, through their seniority, were able to pick this sort of plum flight. And I'll tell you, they ended up just slinging down trays of food in front of everyone and then went and retreated to the galley behind drawn curtains to chat amongst themselves. And we didn't see them for 2 hours. this whole idea, this whole model that the unions are on around, you know, seniority wins and seniority is best for the traveler. Maybe they really don't care about what's best for the traveler. I mean, it doesn't always work. But you do have to wonder, would flight attendants with just a couple of years' experience, would they have been able to as quickly clear everyone out of that downed plane? The Air France flight that ended up having problems in Toronto, or you know, would they have the experience to notice a worried recruit heading to basic training, like I saw a flight attendant do on a recent Denver flight, reaching out to the teenager, nervous about what the next 8 weeks would hold, engaging him in a bit of light conversation till his shoulders started to relax, sort of bit by bit. And his breathing was a little less shallow. You know, as we said in the first topic, the travel experience is, at its core, a person-to-person business. The bad impression left by a delay from maintenance or poor food or a screwed-up ticket can either be resolved or exacerbated by a personal interaction. Clinging to seniority, the airline unions are trying to hang on to a model, seniority equals capability, that's been disproven in other industries for years. However, the assumption behind the cram-down tactics of airlines, that passengers don't care about service, only about price, and to survive, they need to pull out as much labor cost as they can, you know, that doesn't work either, at least amongst those of us who travel for a living. Outsourcing flight attendants, and what's next, then the pilots? I mean, these are the people who deliver the service I'm buying. Well, after you do that, what's left? You know, a logo, some gates, a frequent flyer program? I mean, what is a virtual airline? An airline or a marketing program? I mean, really, at Southwest, which has consistently been the most profitable U.S. airline, the people you come in contact with are proud employees who seem to hustle more than most to take care of their customers. Can you get that intangible, that extra effort from just a contractor? I mean, think for just a minute. Let's just do a quick little exercise here. Just for a minute. Think of a full air sickness bag and put yourself in the flight attendant's position. What would it take for you to be eager to take that from a complete stranger? The last topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, defining personal space at 35,000 feet. You know, with 150 people crammed into an aluminum tube at 35,000 feet, agreeing upon the boundaries of each person's personal space is pretty important. You know, with the act of travel, now the physical movement of people from one place to another, with that act now really more a means to an end, more about getting to the destination than enjoying the journey, you know, figuring out what couple of cubic feet I can claim as mine so I can get into some sort of Zen state and survive the next couple of hours undisturbed is pretty important. You know, that being said, the boundaries are pretty well known. You know what? The seat that I'm in is mine. The back of my seat to the back of the seat in front of me, from the floor up to the ceiling and the outer armrest. All mine. Now, the inner armrest and coach, that's where you get into some negotiation, because the poor guy in the center, that's the worst place to be, because two things. Number one, you just don't have an armrest to call your own. You've got to share both of them. The second is the airspace above you is not your own either, because the guy in the window and the guy in the aisle have got to reach up over your head to either turn on or off their air vent, turn on or on their off or on their light. So That's just a lousy place to be. But you do end up having to negotiate the armrest space. And most of the time, being guys, and let's face it, you know, probably 90% of the people I sit next to are other guys, it's a nonverbal negotiation and with a minimum amount of touching. Because we've got to figure out, do you want to be, you know, who's going to be in the front of the armrest, maybe the back of the armrest? Are we going to try and split it across the side? But you know, two things. Number one, we don't talk about it. Number two, we don't touch, at least never more than a half a second. So those are the boundaries. I'm in the seat. The seat's mine. Other than negotiating the armrest, leave it alone. So I'm pretty annoyed on my flight out to California yesterday when the guy behind me turns out to be a seat gripper. Now, a seat gripper is a person who just can't seem to move in their seat without reaching forward and pulling on the back of yours. So literally every sort of 10 to 15 minutes on a four-hour flight, this guy is reaching up, grabbing the top of my seat because he needed to either stand up or adjust himself in the seat or just to adjust his seating. And I'll tell you, if he wasn't grabbing my seat, then he had his knees shoved into the back of my seat. It was just really annoying. And it was more than just the physical discomfort. It was sort of the mental jarring. Again, you know, I'm just trying to find my space, stay within it, make it through a four-hour flight. And this guy, through his sort of seat gripping and knee jamming, seems to be trying to expand his space. But the problem is there's a fixed amount of space. So he expanding his space is taking away from mine. I'll bet you this guy was also hogging that interior armrest from the middle guy too. Okay, so what do you do? Well, the first thing that comes to mind is slamming my seat back to feed him a mouthful of headrest. And that may feel good for a moment, but you know that's just not going to get you anywhere. Because what are we all trying to do? We're just trying to get along so we can get off the plane. So instead, I reach down, I pull out the Bose noise-canceling headphones, plug it into my iPod, dial up some loud music, and hope for a lot of turbulence. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons Podcast number 20. I hope you all enjoyed the podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Again, thanks for all the emails to comments@travelcommons.com, the comments that you leave on the travelcommons.com website, and also the comments that folks leave at podcastdaily.com. I really appreciate all the feedback, and look forward to hearing from you soon. Till then, take care, and safe travels. Bye now.